Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to update events having to do with Germany. This first article was researched for us by a member of the listening audience who got this from the Electronic Telegraph, and this comes from the Electronic Telegraph, by the way, the Daily Telegraph, a paper in the United Kingdom. This comes from the Daily Telegraph of Sunday, January 10th of 1999. Veteran listeners to the program are familiar with the interviews that I did in 1993 and 1994 with Professor Wilhelm Stauffer. That is a pseudonym for an expert on German political affairs and history who runs a consulting service with an overtly anti-fascist perspective that advises small European countries and corporations with regard to matters European and German in particular. Again, they have an explicitly anti-fascist perspective. And it was my privilege to air these interviews with Professor Stauffer in 1993 and 1994. And by the way, they are available from Spitfire. One of the leading fronts for the BND, the German Intelligence Service, or something that was alleged by Professor Stauffer to be arguably the leading front for German intelligence around the world. The German Intelligence Service, the BND, or Bundesnachrichtendienst, evolved from the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit that was grafted onto the CIA at the end of World War II. It ultimately jumped to the Federal Republic of Germany and evolved into its intelligence service, which retains all of its Nazi character. However, that Nazi character has been very skillfully masked, allegedly, according to Professor Stauffer, behind the front of the Goethe Institute. The ubiquitous Goethe Institute masquerades as a German cultural institute. It's quite well known and quite prestigious in certain circles, but Professor Stauffer alleges, and he is a very credible source, that it is a front for the BND. This is ironic because Johann Goethe himself, one of the most famous figures in German letters and culture, was himself a spy for the state, according to new research that's been developed by a professor at the University of California at Berkeley. This article is called Goethe the Informer Rooted Out Enemies of the State. It's by Tony Patterson in Berlin. The article reads in part, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, the German literary giant lionized as a champion of the Enlightenment, enjoyed a lesser-known career as a spy, informing on students who espoused, quote, liberal, unquote, views, and helping to censor fellow writers. The claim that the German writer fulfilled a role similar to that adopted 200 years later by East Germany's notorious Stasi secret police has been made by Daniel Wilson, an American professor of German at Berkeley University in California. Mr. Wilson is due to publish a series of damaging revelations about the hitherto unexplored dark side of the philosopher-poet's character in a book titled The Goethe Taboo later this year. His findings, which echo similar revelations in Britain about the poet Wordsworth, seem destined to send shockwaves through Germany's literary and academic establishment, which continues to depict Goethe as an unblemished hero of the Enlightenment. Skipping down, during his years at the Weimar court, Goethe is said to have been responsible for financing spy rings at the state's prestigious Jena University, which were set up to guard against what were regarded as a dangerous liberal tendencies of students infected by the values of the French Revolution and the American War of Independence. Mr. Wilson said he has evidence that Goethe frequently worked as a state informer by infiltrating many of the enlightened, quote, secret societies of the time, reporting back to the Duke on their activities, and ensuring that his initials were at the bottom of state edicts that formally outlawed such organizations. It may well be that the BND selected the Goethe Institute in part because of the irony of Goethe, one of the most prestigious figures in the history of German culture and letters, and one who now apparently was functioning as a spy. That may have been why the BND, according to Professor Stauffer, selected the Goethe Institute to function in a fashion not altogether unlike the fashion that Goethe himself appears to have operated in. I would also note that one of the major targets of Goethe's activities were students who had been infected, quote-unquote, with the ideas of the French Revolution. Klaus Naumann, now the head of the NATO Permanent Military Committee, and at the time the Inspector General of the German Armed Forces, the equivalent of our Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in an address to his generals shortly after German reunification, or in the immediate in the years following German reunification, stated that now the task of the German military was going to be to roll back the values of liberty, equality, and fraternity, the values of the French Revolution. Quite a statement by the highest-ranking German, or quite a statement for the highest-ranking German military officer to have made in an address to his staff. In a pair of half-hour segments, two pairs of half-hour segments entitled German Corporate Control of American Publishing, I discussed the von Holtzbrinck firm, which along with Bertelsmann is one of the leading German corporations that now dominate American publishing. The head of a von Holtzbrinck firm joined the Nazi Party 2 years before Hitler took power, profited handsomely from his association with the Nazi Party, and then in the post-war period was noted for hiring liberal numbers of SS men to work for his firm, suggesting the probability that the von Holtzbrinck firm was associated with the Odessa Network and, in all likelihood, the Bormann Organization as well. One of the people that was selected by von Holtzbrinck to head up, in fact, the person selected by von Holtzbrinck to head up Henry Holt & Company when it was purchased by the von Holtzbrinck firm was Michael Naumann, who proved to be so abrasive that he was not in a position to stay on as his head of Henry Holt. However, Michael Naumann has now emerged as the Minister for Cultural Affairs in the new quote, center-left, unquote, government in Germany. Note the quotes. We're going to talk about that later. The Financial Times of London of Wednesday, December 30th of 1998, had the following article in the comment and analysis section. This is an article called Goodbye to All That. It's talking about the end of the coal era. Ralph Atkins, A-T-K-I-N-S, asks whether the election of a left-of-center government and the start of the Berlin Republic signals a more assertive Germany, and indeed it does. That's why I talk about the center-left government and put it in quotes. This is in many ways the most chauvinist and nationalistic government in post-World War II German history. I suspect that it is to a considerable extent a front, utilizing the good auspices of the Green Party in order to give themselves credibility. In this country, the U.S. intelligence community runs the left pretty much lock, stock, and barrel. I consider the Germans to be considerably more clever than we are, and if they haven't learned that trick when the United States has, I'd be very, very surprised indeed. However, skipping down in this article, there's discussion of Michael Naumann, formerly of the von Holtzbrinck firm, again, an SS-connected firm in the post-World War II period, and the former head of Henry Holt & Company, and now the German cultural minister, or the German Minister for Cultural Affairs. Skipping down. Mr. Schroeder's election has to an extent proved cathartic. Martin Walser, the novelist, has sparked controversy by suggesting Germans should no longer be preoccupied by the events of the 1930s and 1940s, and by complaining of the media's, quote, constant presentation of our shame, unquote. Michael Naumann, the former publisher, again that's of von Holtzbrinck and Henry Holt, who was Mr. Schroeder's Minister for Cultural Affairs, is opposing plans for a giant Holocaust memorial near the Brandenburg Gate in the center of Berlin. The proposal for a field of stone slabs designed by Peter Eisenman, the New York architect, which Mr. Naumann criticizes as being overwhelming, is likely to be replaced by a less brutal exhibition or depository of Holocaust evidence. Note again that Michael Naumann is now the Minister for Cultural Affairs, formerly of von Holtzbrinck and Henry Holt & Company, and it was at a publishing event that German author Martin Walser made that comment, which stirred up a major controversy in Germany. We're going to turn for information about that once again to the British anti-fascist publication The Searchlight. This is from The Searchlight's issue of February of 1999. By the way, The Searchlight can be reached at 37B as in boy, New Cavendish Street. Cavendish is C-A-V-E-N-D-I-S-H. London, William 1 Mary 8 J.R. Once again, 37B as in boy, New Cavendish Street, London, W1M 8JR. Their telephone number 0171-284-4040, fax 0171-284-4410. Email address for Searchlight, editor at s-light.demon.co.uk. Once again, that email address, editor at slight.demon.co.uk. You can visit the Searchlight's website at www.s-light.demon.co.uk. Again, www.s-light.demon.co.uk. By the way, the Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight, its ideological opposite. In an article entitled "Writer Stirs Up Row Over Germany's Past" by Tammy Wild, W-I-L-D, their German correspondent, we read, "A controversial speech by the German author Martin Walser has made anti-Semitism headline news again. Speaking in November at an award ceremony in Frankfurt am Main, staged by the German book trade, Walser indirectly but very clearly hinted that the public debate in Germany over the Nazi Holocaust and responsibility for it should be drawn to a close. Walser was being presented with the German Book Trade Peace Prize. His remarks sparked a big public discussion and sharp exchanges between him and the Jewish community leader Ignaz Bubis. That Walser enjoyed considerable public support was evident from the results of an opinion poll published at the end of December in the weekly paper Die Woche. That's D-W-O-C-H-E. And again, that from the Searchlight's issue of February of 1999. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this also from the Electronic Telegraph. This, by the way, you can reach the Electronic Telegraph at www.telegraph.co.uk. This is from the Electronic Telegraph of November 7th of 1998. More about the controversy that the remarks of Martin Walser sparked. Again, bear in mind that this was in an award ceremony. The comments were made at an award ceremony staged by the German Book Trade, and Walser was being presented with a German Book Trade Peace Prize. And bear in mind that the current Minister for Cultural Affairs of Germany is, of course, as mentioned, Michael Naumann, formerly of von Holtzbrinck and Henry Holt. This article by Andrew Gimson, G-I-M-S-O-N, in Berlin is headlined, "Jewish Leader Appalled by Racist Germans." And skipping down, speaking of Martin Walser's speech, "Mr. Walser argued that the emphasis in Germany on the Holocaust and its use as a, quote, moral club, unquote, would prove counterproductive. He rejected Mr. Bubis's attack, pointing out that, quote, 1,200 fairly well-qualified contemporaries, unquote, had given him a standing ovation. However, Mr. Bubis, who lost several relatives in the Holocaust, saw the positive response to the speech as confirmation that, quote, intellectual nationalism, unquote, was growing." And indeed, nationalism and chauvinism is indeed on the increase in Germany. I suspect that the current government is in using the goodwill and good reputation of the Green Party as something of a front. If this were the CDU-CSU acting in the sort of nationalist and chauvinist way that the current government of Germany is acting, there'd be armies mobilizing all over Europe. But I suspect the ostensible center-left cover is keeping people mollified who would not otherwise be mollified. But note some of the nationalist and chauvinist noises coming out of Germany these days. Financial Times of London, Wednesday, February 10th of 1999. Article by Tony Barber in Frankfurt and John Authors and Richard Wolff in New York, or Wolf, W-O-L-F-F-E, in New York. Deutsche warns lawsuits may halt $10 billion bank deal. Subtitled, "Breuer seeks settlement of Holocaust compensation cases to save takeover of Bankers Trust." The article reads in part, "Rolf Breuer, chairman of Deutsche Bank, yesterday tried to increase the pressure for early settlement of Holocaust-related U.S. lawsuits against his bank by suggesting that a delay might prompt it to withdraw from its $10 billion purchase of Bankers Trust. But U.S. campaigners on behalf of Holocaust victims said talks to resolve the issue were proceeding well. Israel Singer, Secretary General of the World Jewish Congress, described talks earlier this week as a, quote, breakthrough, unquote, while Edward Fagan, a lawyer who has made several outspoken attacks on the German banks, praised the German government for its courage. I would note that in addition to class action suits against a number of German corporations that were involved in the Holocaust, there are also class action suits against several American banks, as well as Ford and General Motors, whom, as we've seen in numerous archive shows, including Uncle Sam and the Swastika and the first two RFA shows, as well as numerous half-hour segments, such as a pair of interviews with Christopher Simpson, the author of The Splendid Blonde Beast, about that title, American corporations and financial financial institutions were deeply involved with the financing of fascism in general and Nazi Germany in particular. Again, you can contact Spitfire for many of the archive shows about that. The role of American corporations in helping to finance Mussolini is discussed in Uncle Sam and Il Duce. Again, that's a critical element of the research that I've been presenting over the years and can be accessed from Spitfire. More about some of the very defensive and chauvinist posture being adopted, or voiced, I should say, by Germany. This also from the Financial Times of Wednesday, February 10th of 1999. This is an article also by Alexander Nickel and Ralph Atkins, "British Defense Merger Upsets Bonn's Vision." Subtitle, "Germany Sees BAE Deal as Setback in Setting Up a Unified European Defense Group." British Aerospace has stirred a hornet's nest in Bonn with its planned £7 billion purchase of the Marconi Defense Division of General Electric Company. By the way, that's a British General Electric, not American General Electric. The deal, if cleared by regulators, would create a British defense giant instead of the Anglo-German combine, which the German government thought would result from months of negotiations between BAE and Daimler Chrysler Aerospace, or DASA. Basically, this is this article, which I'm going to have to sum up due to the limitations of time, involves criticism of the British takeover of Marconi by the Germans, and said basically that this threatens EU solidarity, and that, quite frankly, is nonsense. The United Kingdom is a full-fledged member of the EU. Its purchase of Marconi in no way threatens EU solidarity, since that's within EU. It does, however, threaten German economic and strategic hegemony over the EU, and I don't think one needs to be a prophet or a seer to determine that meaning between the lines of the criticism that has been voiced against this particular takeover. Some of that voicing, quote, "that BAE should go with Marconi surprised me, and I told John Weston so," unquote, says a senior German defense official. Quote, "I'm still waiting for him to explain what happened." And again, this is being viewed as inimical to EU integration. It has nothing to do. It's not in any way inimical to EU integration. Britain is a full-fledged member of the EU. It does, however, retard Germany's hegemony over the proposed unified defense industries of the EU. Another article which talks about some very angry noises and nationalist noises being made by this, quote, center-left government, unquote, in Germany. This also was researched for us by a listener. This comes from the Electronic Telegraph of Wednesday, January 13th of 1999. This also was by Andrew Gimson, GIMSON in Berlin, and George Jones. It's headlined, "Germany Calls for End to EU Veto," and it reads in part as follows. Germany risked a new clash with Britain over the pace of European integration by calling yesterday for the national veto to be removed in most EU decision-making. The effect of such a change would be that decisions in sensitive areas such as taxation would be taken by weighted majority voting instead of unanimously as at present. This could help Germany and France to make progress toward harmonizing minimum tax levels, threatening the low rate of business taxes in Britain. Tony Blair has pledged to resist pan-European rates of tax. The Prime Minister is also relying on the veto to defend Britain's £2 billion a year rebate from the EU budget, which is now in Germany's sights as part of efforts to reform the community's finances. The voting issue was raised by Joschka Fischer, the German Foreign Minister, when he outlined to the European Parliament his country's plans for its six-month EU presidency. By the way, the German Foreign Minister's name, and I may be mispronouncing his first name, Joschka, and Fischer, Fischer. Continuing, Bonn would be pressing for the change at the Cologne summit in June, he said. It wished to keep unanimous voting only for changes to EU treaties. He said the EU would suffer, quote, an institutional heart attack, unquote, unless it took, quote, bold steps, unquote, towards full integration, which would give, quote, the Europe of the past, the Europe of nationalism and war, unquote, no chance in the future. By the way, this is an absolutely outrageous and grossly hypocritical comment for a German foreign minister to make about the proposed changes for weighted majority voting instead of the veto. It was Germany using the very veto they're now trying to outlaw that stymied the European Community's resolution to maintain the political integrity of the former Yugoslavia. When Montenegro and Croatia declared their independence, it was Germany who basically bludgeoned the European Community into accepting, the European Union into accepting or recognizing the independence of Croatia, not Montenegro, but Croatia and Slovenia. I'm sorry, it was Croatia and Slovenia. And although the vote was 11-1, Germany being the one who vetoed that resolution, it was that veto that led to European recognition of Slovenian and Croatian independence, and that led directly to the Balkans War. In a recent pair of half-hour segments called Update on Germany, we reviewed German intelligence and German military support for the Kosovo Liberation Army that is continuing the disintegration of the former Yugoslavia. I would note that the Bush administration backed Germany when they recognized the independence of Croatia and Slovenia, and American troops have been among those that have been called in to act as a fire damp in the fire that was ignited by the recognition of Slovenian and Croatian independence. But this is an outrageous statement for Mr. Fischer to make in light of the fact that it was Germany that basically lit the match to the Balkan tinderbox. Continuing, resuming with this statement, he, speaking of Fischer, said the EU would suffer, quote, an institutional heart attack, unquote, unless it took bold steps, unquote, toward full integration, which would give, quote, the Europe of the past, the Europe of nationalism and war, unquote, no chance in the future. Referring to conflicts in the Balkans, Mr. Fischer said, quote, both alternatives are at present the reality in Europe, unquote. These are seen by German politicians as proof of the horrors caused by national rivalry and the absolute need for integration. Well, the Croatian fascists, reborn now in the newly independent Croatia, are German protégés as well as protégés of some of the allies of German fascism in the United States. That is a grossly hypocritical comment for a German foreign minister to be making. Turning once again to the Searchlight, the British anti-fascist publication, there's an article about the flight of a German Nazi to neighboring Austria. And in discussion of this German Nazi advocate's career, this fellow's named Karl Polacek, P-O-L-A-C-E-K, I want to note the continuity between the milieu of Karl Polacek and the milieu of the old guard of the Third Reich, specifically people going back to the SS and the SA. Discussion of Mr. Polacek's career is contained in an article called Questions Over Delay in Case Against Nazi. It's by the Searchlight's Austrian correspondent, and it reads in part as follows, skipping down. Pre-trial investigations of Polacek's nefarious activities have taken several years, and the Greens have tabled parliamentary questions condemning the prosecutor, Heinrich Steinsky, a member of the ultra-rightist student fraternity Suevia, for the long delay in bringing the case to court. Note the Green Party's role there. Meanwhile, according to a report in the Austrian magazine News, Polacek even attended a lecture by Steinsky at a political club in Salzburg in June last year. Note that the prosecutor has basically a member of an extreme right-wing group and was attending a lecture in Salzburg by Polacek. By the way, the Greens tabled the investigation of that prosecutor. Continuing. Last spring, Polacek began using a postbox in Hallwang, H-A-L-L-W-A-N-G, as a mailing address for his hate sheet. The same address is used by Helmut Schoenanger, S-H-O-U-M-L-A-U-T-N-A-N-G-E-R-E-R, who attracted media scrutiny in the 1970s as the main Austrian contact of the convicted German Nazi terrorist Karl-Heinz Hoffmann, whose heavily armed military sports group caused much embarrassment to the German authorities. By the way, the Sportgruppe Hoffmann was responsible for the Oktoberfest bombing in Munich in October of 1980. One of its key members, Otfried Hepp, was a member of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command of Abu Abbas, assisted by Manzer al-Qassar and involved in the Achille Lauro hijacking. An excuse for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann himself, an alibi, despite the fact that he was implicated in the Munich Oktoberfest bombing of 1980, was provided by none other than Hans Langemann, an official for the Verfassungsschutz, a domestic German intelligence agency. Langemann was previously the BND operative who was in charge of the security for the 1972 Munich Olympics. And the Palestinian raiders who conducted the massacre at that Olympics were led by Ali Hassan Salome, the son of Hassan Salome, who was one of the top assistants, one of the top lieutenants of Haj Amin al-Husseini, a major in the SS, and the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement. That, by the way, discussed at great length in RFA program number 22. Later, Langemann and the then head of the BKA, the Bundeskriminalamt, the equivalent of our FBI, were setting up counter-terrorist groups, which, according to the German leftist magazine Concrete, actually functioned as agent provocateur. So note connections here between one of Polachek's protectors and also Sportgruppe Hoffmann. Continuing. In 1982, Schoenengerer stood as a local council candidate for the fascist VSO in Salzburg. Its leader, Fritz Rebhandel, R-E-B-H-A-N-D-L, provided accommodation for Polachek when he returned to Austria after being kicked out of Germany. Rebhandel, convicted in 1992 for Nazi activities, is also facing trial. In July, he was charged by a court in Ried, R-I-E-D, for his role as editor of the extreme right-wing journal Der Volkstreue. According to the charge sheet, Rebhandel, a former member of the Das Reich division of the Waffen-SS and one-time regional spokesman of the now-banned Nazi National Demokratische Partei, or NDP, used the magazine repeatedly to deny that the Holocaust took place. While some Austrian Nazis are on their way to prison, others have been trying very hard to polish up their image and win social acceptance. None more so than the unwholesome crew who run the fascist Aula Publishing House, that's A-U-L-A. Recently, they were able to grace their enterprise with a contribution from one of Austria's foremost Roman Catholics, the Vatican-based Cardinal Josef Ratzinger. A book published by Aula, 1848, Heritage and Mission, includes a chapter by him titled Freedom and Truth, unquote, in which he denounces, quote, false contemporary ideas of freedom, unquote. Skipping down. The editor of this collection of far-right theory is the veteran Nazi Otto Skrinzi, S-C-R-I-N-Z-I. Skrinzi's pedigree extends back to before the war, when he wore the brown shirt of an SA Sturmfuhrer as a member of Hitler's Nazi Party. After the war, he swapped his uniform for a collar and tie to rise to the position of MP for Jörg Haider's Austrian Freedom Party, or FPO. So, again, note yet another of the associates of Karl Polachek, in addition to a former member of the Das Reich Waffen-SS division, is a former member of the SA, and an individual who now is a member of Jörg Haider's Austrian Freedom Party. Jörg Haider, the so-called yuppie fascist, is one of the rising stars in the European fascist scene. Although his Freedom Party has been dealt some temporary setbacks, it is still one of the most powerful of the overtly fascist political parties in Europe. Again, note the political continuity between some of the newer generation of Nazis in Germany and Austria and some of the old guard from the SA and the SS. Yet another reason why political amnesia is not to be winked at in Europe, in Germany, or any place else, that sort of political amnesia being officially sanctioned by author Martin Walzer when he got the German Book Trade Peace Prize at an event sponsored by the German Book Trade. Bear in mind that a key individual from the German Book Trade, Michael Naumann of the SS-connected von Holtzbrinck firm, is now the German cultural minister. And again, he was formally appointed by the von Holtzbrinck firm to be the head of Henry Holt and Company. That concludes this half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.